This is The Topic is Trek, episode 120 for Friday, August 5th, 2022. Coming up in this episode, we bid farewell to a legend. Thoughts on Comic-Con news. We head back to the NX-01. All that and more right now on The Topic is Trek. Hailing frequencies forever. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, The Topic is Trek. Engage already. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another thrill-packed episode of The Topic is Trek. I am one of your co-hosts, Clinton, but in order to be a co-host, I always say you have to have other hosts. Now, beaming in to join me first from parts unknown, but with the hip new catchphrase that everyone will be talking about tomorrow around the water cooler, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Where's the beef?
Where's the...
I'm pretty sure we've used that one already.
Oh, yeah, well. And I think someone else has used it before we used it, so we'll...
yes.
Well,
the correct answer was replicator.
I see. Suddenly we've gone into jeopardy. I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, what is replicator?
Well, Eric's is here.
It seems, Craig, you have a singular wit.
Yeah, right.
And there will be hijinks. All right. And also, you can hear the voice.
You guys missed the reference. That was from Star Trek VI. When they were on trial in the Klingon court, and Chang says, one Klingon kind of laughs at McCoy's joke. Seems, Doctor, you have a singular wit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Why is there this giant tracking device on my shoulder? Anyway. And I think you can hear the voice of the other co-host, Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Hello, hello, everybody.
Hello. Well, it's been quite a couple of weeks.
Wait, I recognize that from Star Trek VI when they were... Never mind.
Really? I didn't think that they... that's interesting.
It was a quote from Cybok.
That's what the guy said after he got kicked in the knee.
And everyone keeps their stuff in the same place, shall we say. All right. Yeah. Well, it's been a very news-filled and all sorts of things have been happening in the Trek universe. And I think, first off, we have to acknowledge a passing that just happened. We lost Nichelle Nichols last week as we record this. And it was not unexpected, but at the same time, it was a shock to the system, nonetheless. I mean, we're talking about a classic character, a very important figure, not only in Star Trek, but also in civil rights and in the space program. Mm-hmm. Nichelle covered a lot of ground in her time here on Earth.
Truly larger than life.
Indeed. I had a chance to meet Nichelle a couple of times. I don't know if, did either of you get a chance, like at Dragon, because she was at Dragon Con a couple of times we were there. Did you get a chance to?
I did not, no.
Okay.
I did. She ran over my foot with her wheelchair.
Yes, they had to get Nichelle from various parts of the hotel, and she was in a wheelchair, and they were just booking through.
It was through that little...
the Habit Trails.
Yeah, it was the little Habit Trail going from Marriott over to the Hilton. You know, it's kind of tight anyway, especially when you got people. And I heard coming through, and I stepped back a little bit, and then I felt fa-bunk, fa-bunk. And she said, "I'm sorry" out loud. And the only thing I could utter out was, "I love you."
Never washing this foot again.
I know. Once I realized who it was, that's all I could think of.
Will you sign my cast?
That's right. That's quick. You got to cast that quick.
Well, it's the future where she's going through. So, you know,
come prepared. Yeah. I knew someone was going to run over my foot.
Yeah. But she was a class act. I'll tell you that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think anybody will be like that again.
And we also lost David Warner.
Yes. That's true. Do you want to go through his... Who was in
back-to-back Star Wars, or Star Trek movies, excuse me.
So, Craig. Oh, Craig, that was a bad slip-up.
It doesn't matter. I like them all. It doesn't matter. But no, I thought it's funny because, you know, I didn't really think about it much. You know, I knew it, but I didn't think about it much until the other day. People were posting pictures and went, oh, yeah, that's right. He was in back-to-back Star Trek movies.
Right. So he was playing a human, mm-hmm. and then he was playing a Klingon, and then he was playing a Cardassian.
That's right.
On
Deep Space Nine.
The Next Generation.
Oh, Next Gen. Yeah, that's right.
Next Generation.
He did a lot of other stuff. He's got a really long resume. Oh,
absolutely.
I spotted his voice anyway. It wasn't him, but it was his voice as the narrator on one of the Winnie the Pooh specials. Like, yep, there he is again.
Oh, that's cool. He was on Tron, of course.
Right. And yes. He was in Time After Time, which I think Time After Time came before he was in Trex. So I'm wondering if, you know,
Nicholas Meyer. Time After Time was like early 80s.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if Nicholas Meyer said, hey, there's this guy I know who does good stuff.
And he's got a cool British accent.
Of course, that same movie also had Malcolm McDowell in it. So.
By the way, I type in Time After Time, I get Cyndi Lauper. That's like, I was going to look at the year for that movie. 79. Okay, it was 79. I was close.
So they will both be missed. You know, we always, we don't usually dwell on people's passings on this show, but I felt like these were important people to acknowledge their contributions to Trek and other things, and to say that they will indeed be missed.
That's right.
All right. That said, somebody who isn't going to be missed if we ever can get rid of him.
Yeah, Chuck.
No, not Chuck. and not Eric's. I'm speaking, of course, of Mr. Charlie X, because this is the point in the show that I dread, where I have to say, Charlie, are we all set for subspace chatter?
You don't need all that
stuff. Wet mashed potatoes?
What? Your voice is changing, Charlie. I don't know.
He's growing up.
In a very strange way.
We don't need all that wet mashed potatoes. What was that?
Yeah. Very random things going on here.
How long did you practice that before you tried it?
Just made it up.
It was seamless. It was like, you know.
It wasn't seamless. No, it wasn't. A little slow on the mute button. If I had practiced, it might have worked.
All right. Well, as I said before, since we last spoke, a little thing called San Diego Comic-Con happened. Mm. And by now, you've probably read a lot of reports on what was announced. And we just want to go over some of the highlights and talk about them.
We're going to rehash it in excruciating detail for you anyway.
That's right. I don't know if it's excruciating detail, but I jotted down a couple of things that I thought were important. And if anybody wants to jump in with other things from each particular panel or other things that were mentioned there, you know, feel free to. So, Craig, why don't you kick us off with the Picard panel?
I think to do this properly, our listener ought to pause their podcast right now, leave the room they're in, stand in the hall for 4 or 5 hours, then come back in the room and hit play.
Four or five hours. You are being generous here, 4 or 5 hours.
Oh, you want the Hall H experience, I see.
Right. Absolutely.
All right, so... In the Picard panel, we got a new teaser for season 3 showing Beverly Crusher, Geordi LaForge, William Riker, Deanna Troi, Seven of Nine, which is Annika Hansen.
Spoiler alert!
Raffi Musaker. And people went nuts over Old Man Worf.
Yeah.
White hair. So we also learned that the season will begin with the crew scattered across many places in the galaxy, but we are guaranteed that there will be scenes that include the entire team. Alex Kurtzman said that Brent Spiner will also be there playing an old new character. All
you
right.
Make sense of that one because I couldn't.
It's
playing, that means he's playing Brent Spiner.
No, he's playing another relative, Carl Soon.
Ah, yes.
President Soon. Sir Patrick said the story will involve Picard, dealing with the ramifications of something that happened to him as a child.
Wait, we already had
that.
We just did that.
All right. Well,
this
we'll
is
see.
A different something. This is the time that he couldn't.
The other something.
He couldn't find the corkscrew.
That's right. there was no confirmation that this is a continuation of the season two story. We learned that there will be an Enterprise in the story, and there was some confusion about which one, and I think that's planned, or which ones there will be. So that'll be interesting to find out. Mm. The villain will be female, causing con-level chaos, but it will not be a character that we've seen before, which I think is good.
Mm.
I think is good.
So did anything else stand out for you guys at the Picard section of the Star Trek universe? Yeah. Or as Leah Thompson said at the closing of, I think she said Star Trek Universal.
Wrong
studio. You don't do that.
Yep.
She must be thinking of Howard the Duck.
I that's one of the things I didn't put down the notes. I loved Leia as the host for all the panels for two reasons. One, because clearly she's a Trek fan, because sometimes you have the person running being the moderator and they've done a little bit of research and they can.
Yeah.
Clearly she was watching these shows because when you came out and doing the thing and that other thing happened over there, but also she mispronounced so many names when she was introducing people. I felt like, yes, everybody's human. And she's proving it that we can all make the same mistake.
Well, that's okay. Even in Star Trek, they can't pronounce the same name. The same. Is it Omicron? Omicron said it.
I have to ask the Mugatu or the
Mugatu. I feel her pain.
Yes, exactly.
Nobody thinks I'm human.
The jury is still out.
So they didn't. We didn't get a lot as far as the storyline goes in this thing. We get that little hint from Sir Patrick about what's going to be involved in this, and since it's about Picard, obviously it's going to be something that's key to Picard.
Well, I guess the big takeaway for me was the Enterprise thing. You're not really sure what ship they're going to be on or what ships we're going to see. I want to see more of that, the E, to be honest with you.
NCC-1701X.
X. Well, there could be an F. That's what they keep telling us. That's what the tweet, who was that that tweeted that out? He said something about, he mentioned F in his tweet, and it's like everybody went, "Oh, we're gonna see Enterprise F."
I don't think so, because otherwise you'd have to have Troy say something like, "Get the F out of there,"
and you might.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not unusual for her to say that. Maybe not Troy, but Maria Sirtis would say that.
Captain. Well, you also recall that there was that image. I feel like it was 5 years ago, but it was probably sometime last year. One of the things that they were putting into season three appeared to be the bosun's whistle that you see on Enterprise A.
That one?
When Kirk is coming on board, which makes me wonder, are we going to also see, for some reason, that era ship in there someplace as well? It's very intriguing, because you now have several moving pieces. You have, all right, you've got members of the crew all over the place, and I don't know whether this is like trying to get the gang back together. They go around and pick up people at various places, or how that's going to work. But then you have this villain.
I don't have a ride, Picard. Can you come pick me up?
Yeah, really. And you have possibly more than one starship. So time travel involved. I don't know what to make of this thing. Then layer on top of that, they're talking about having a very prominent musical tribute to Jerry Goldsmith. Now, if you play the theme from Star Trek, the motion picture / Star Trek, the Next Generation, that's clearly a nod to Jerry Goldsmith, but I don't think that's, I got a feeling that's not where it's stopping. I got a feeling there's more to it than that. So it's going to be interesting. And of course we got no date
right
for this, when it's going to be out. The thing everybody wanted.
Who did the music for the motion picture?
It was Jerry Goldsmith.
Okay. So maybe they'll play that overture, you know,
the Aaliyah's theme. Hmm? Well, you're talking about Aaliyah's theme, right?
The part that's before the movie started, Maybe they'll play that. I actually like that. Well, we talked about overtures the other day.
So. One of the last major motion pictures that had an overture.
Until your podcast came around.
That's right. One of the other ones being The Black Hole. Same year. All right, let's move on to our next panel. Chuck.
We were then treated to a trailer for season 2 of Lower Decks, filled with the usual overabundance of... What's that?
That'll be season 3, my mistake
there. Okay, that's right, because we already watched. Because a trailer for season 2, well, that's not much of a spoiler.
That would be kind of ridiculous.
Well, you know...
Great, I think I've seen this before.
Stop slingshotting around the sun! Yeah. Told you once, I've told you 1,000 times, the sun is not a toy. Of course, it was filled with our usual overabundance of Trek references. One that generated the most buzz was the fact that the USS Cerritos will be visiting Deep Space Nine. Where was I? Lost space. Oh, gotta admire the pylons. We also learned that Don Lewis, like Tawny Newsome, I almost got those names mashed up. Dawn Lewis is a major Star Trek fan. She nearly lost it when she found out she had been cast in Star Trek playing Captain Freeman. Lewis was able to give the news to a friend that she had made, Nichelle Nichols. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Jack Quaid said that he has never met Eugene Cordero in person, and Tawny Newsome was needling Mike McMahon, wanting the cast to be able to record all together, not in isolated sessions.
Which I find interesting, because it sounds like they've never been in the studio together. And I think that's because of the timing of when...
COVID, you mean?
Yeah, when Lower Decks was in the works.
They would have been working on season 1 pre-COVID, though. Were they not?
Well, I...
Maybe barely.
Because one of the things... You know, as mentioned here, is that Jack Quaid has never met Eugene Cordero. So they can't have all have been recording together.
Yeah.
At that point.
Well, you know, we've been doing podcasting for 17 years. You know, it's easy enough to do this kind of stuff isolated. However, there is a benefit to being in each other and playing off each other in the same room.
Right.
So it's easy to say, yeah. They never really met, but it'd be awesome if they did record all together. Weren't they doing that on Futurama? Or were they trying to? I think they were doing that before.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're able to say the lines, and yeah, you can do a riff, mm-hmm. but you can't, I mean, if you do a riff and the other person's already recorded their lines,
mm-hmm. the reaction,
there's no way to...
Yeah. You better hope it fits or they're going to drop it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I agree with that. I think that especially with people that are used to doing improv stuff, you want them all together to kind of come up with that.
How many times have we seen things where they green screened in a character, and either the eyes don't line up or something doesn't look right? It's the same idea. You know, it'd be great if you're in the same room and you're able to joke off each other, because they use your voice to make the animation. So there's certainly, opportunity to work with it. So
I went.
I think it'd be great.
I went to IMDb real quick, and Second Contact, which is season 1, episode 1, aired August 6th of 2020. So it's quite conceivable that they did the voice work mm-hmm. after, you know, second week of March in 2020.
Or they knew the future and said, oh, we got to be isolated now. You know,
well, it's also, I mean, it's also a case that it's possible that maybe some of them were doing stuff together, but if you don't have schedules lining up, true. Maybe Eugene was not there the same time that,
yeah.
know, that Quaid was there. Because even if you can all do it, doesn't mean you're going to be able to, you know, if he's off doing The Boys or something and they've got to record lines, that type of thing. But I think we would benefit from them being all there together because we get that one extra aspect of this craziness that is Lower Decks.
Well, speaking of aspects, here's a couple more for you. So when it came time for the Strange New Worlds to take the stage, and there was a lot of surprises here at the Star Trek block at Comic-Con. Tawny Newsome and Jack Quaid decided to bust in on the action. It turns out that Beckett Mariner and Brad Boimler, I always have trouble saying that name, Boimler. This doesn't seem right.
And Spellchecker does not like that.
No.
What's the boiler?
add to dictionary.
Yeah. We'll be spending some time on the NCC 1701 in the season 2 of Strange New Worlds. No details were given, but Anson Mount did let it slip that he will appear in 2D at some point. No word on his hair will be 2D, but we'll see. No word on whether or not this will complete this transformation to Johnny Bravo.
Oh, you know, mama. I just figured, you just take Johnny Bravo and you put a Starfleet uniform on him and look.
Yeah.
Oh, Captain mama. Pike.
That's right. And we also learned that we'll be seeing more of the Welcome Gorn in the near future. The Gorn captain will also have a pompadour, as well as perhaps a side of Noonien Singh, not non-Noonien Singh, that swings towards a Khan-like intensity.
Because it sounds like she may be delving into that other aspect of the Noonien Singh.
She'll have some anger issues.
Yeah. Although it's interesting that both with something that I think we'll talk about in the general notes and seeing the Strange New Worlds panel, you get to know, well, who obviously survives or who's going to be back. It's you have Nan go off at the end of season 1 of Strange New Worlds, but she's here at the panel talking about other stuff that she's doing. So clearly she's back.
Well, I don't think that was in question, right? I mean, kind of figured she would.
No, I don't think, but it's like, well, okay, you kind of set up that she's off the ship and you've already clearly made obvious the fact that she's back again.
Yeah, but you don't know what she did while she was off the ship that affected her. So it changed her character a little bit.
She lost a little girl someplace in a mall. I don't know what this is. It's very sad. Oh,
poor
Sigourney Weaver came along and said, hey, that's Newt. I'm taking Newt and going my own way.
Well, I think this is interesting because when they announced this, I just kept trying to imagine how they're going to pull it off. I know we're going to see the voice actors, of course, Tony and Jack, but I'm just trying to imagine what it's going to be like. And I can't wait to see that.
Well, the nice thing about that is that the actors and the characters, you can make.
Oh, they look pretty similar.
The actor look like the character fairly easily. As a matter of fact, when they were, when the actors were at the Star Trek Mission Chicago, they came out in their uniforms as if they were on Galaxy Quest coming out for a convention.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, he even had the hair color in. So it's going to be very easy for that to happen. I would have liked to have everybody there, but again, it might have been a logistics issue and whatever this involved with the story that finds them on the Enterprise, that it's just going to be, you know, Mariner and Boimler.
I want to see them carrying around Jeffrey Combs, you know, as Agamas. You know, I want to see him in real life. What an actor. He can really get into his part.
I say they're chasing Badgie. It's all Badgie's fault.
I want to see, Badgie on the Enterprise.
All right. Were there anything that we missed from all that stuff, Chuck?
Yes, we do have some general notes. So Kurtzman indicated that there were two new Trek series in development. He also stated that we would be seeing more women in leading roles. Yay! Okay. Here we get a special desk bell for that one.
There you go.
When a deaf fan asked if, now that we have a blind person on Trek, could we possibly get someone who is deaf? Well, spoiler alert, the deaf person is gone. Sorry. Rod Roddenberry and Alex Kurtzman both thought that was a really excellent idea. Responding to a question about another next-gen movie and Sir Patrick's enthusiasm for it, Kurtzman said, I love this quote, anything is possible. Of course anything is possible. And he suggested fan reaction was key. Rod Roddenberry pointed out that it was fan reaction that got Strange New Worlds greenlit.
I think we all knew that. Yeah.
Well, we know it now.
I think he's saying, you know, you guys kind of are influencing now. Yeah, so
keep it up.
Kind of up to you.
I mean, I saw so much fan reaction. They would have been stupid to pass that up. That's why. So I was like, I think we kind of knew that. There was no way they would pass that up.
Yeah, but we all know if you leave things up to the internet, you wind up with things like Bodie McBoatface. And we don't want Star Trek to do that.
Nobody wants Bodie.
Enterprise face.
Shuttle McShuttle face. Great new series.
Yeah.
Okay. It also turns out that doing a recording session for Lower Decks is a lot like doing this show. No one shows up.
Yeah. Ours?
Yeah. You don't get paid? How is it?
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, there's lots of general chatter and catching up before the recording actually happens. If you watch the videos, you'll see that. But if you listen to the podcast, you'll miss it. And when asked about the possibility of Deep Space Nine series, Kurtzman kind of danced around the question or the answer. And he indicated that perhaps there had been some discussions, but that what really needed to happen at this point is to have a specific reason for such a revival. It would have to be more than just something like, oh, let's just retread DS9 for DS9's sake. So, good answer.
I'm going to call it right now. Deep Space Nine, The Next Generation. What do you think?
That's a lot of title. That's a lot of title.
Let's call it DS9 Plus.
That's six letters for the whole title.
DS9 Geriatric.
Right.
DS9 TNG.
Yeah, if you called it, you would ruin the whole three. It wouldn't work because, it can't be DS9 and it can't be TNG. It's got to be some combination.
It would be DS10.
Wait a minute. That's, I'm so confused.
No, it's DS10 and a half. They kind of, it's a spaceship.
That sits it's behind a prequel. The we're calling it Tarok Nor and just, all the bad things that happened down in the dilithium.
That's a pleasant thought.
And they tilt it the other way.
No, that was, what was that? Empok Nor, or what was the one that was broken down?
Yeah. There was like sideways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In space. How can it be sideways? It's a,
I'm getting to a point in that in our Enterprise reviews, so take us home here, sir.
All right, and in Paramount Global, Paramount Plus news, because we want to cover what's happening with the service that's giving us all these series, and the mothership, if you will. Paramount Global is the entire organization, which includes the movie studios. Well, in earnings just released for the second quarter of 2022, Paramount Global registered a 126% film unit gain powered by Top Gun Maverick.
Nice.
That movie's just done blockbusters, and it certainly helped the coffers of Paramount. Closer to home, Paramount Plus topped 43 million subscribers. The service added 4.9 million subscribers over the quarter, but then 1.2 million Russian subscribers were removed due to the invasion of Ukraine. In fact, Paramount Plus captured the most signups and net subscriber additions of any premium domestic streaming service.
Wow.
Paramount president and CEO Bob Bakish said the service has been performing above expectations in new markets such as the UK, Ireland, and South Korea. Once again, as in past quarters, Star Trek was cited as one of the main draws for new subscribers.
There's still a lot of growth room, though. 43 million is not that many subscribers for a global audience.
Right. And kind of getting to some of that is the second half of this, because how happy are subscribers with the service? Well, a new report from WHIP Media suggests that the service is holding up its own when it comes to the other major players. HBO Max scored highest in satisfaction with a rating of 94%, followed by Disney Plus at 88%, Hulu at 87%, and Netflix at 80%. Paramount scored a 79% satisfaction, which was up from 75% in 2021. Falling beneath Paramount Plus were Apple TV, Amazon Prime, Discovery Plus, and Peacock. Now, Paramount Plus falls a bit lower when looking at the metric most likely to keep the service, falling to 6th rather than 5th out of 9. Likewise, when customers were asked if they could keep just one of the streaming services they have, or of all those, only 3% would do so with Paramount Plus. Ouch. But that is up from 2% last year.
We're making ground.
Yeah.
And it is not the worst. Apple TV Plus, Discovery Plus, and Peacock all scored 1%.
Well, I'm pretty happy with it for the most part. I think their interface still needs some work. It's improved.
I thought
a little
they were
bit,
releasing but... an update this week, last week. It was.
Oh, really?
There was an update announced somewhere in here.
Yeah. I mean, things like, for example, the episodes we're watching of Enterprise today, I'd watched them a couple weeks ago, and I was going to watch them again today. And I was at the tail end of the last four, you know, the credits were rolling. And I was like, well, there's no start from the beginning. I had to rewind the whole thing.
Right.
Stupid stuff like that. And I mentioned before, depending on where I click on the episode, it starts it over. I'm like, I didn't want to start it over. Why don't you save where I'm at? You know, things like that.
I think the workaround that I found for that, and if they're doing an update, maybe that is, they've addressed that, but I find if I go, it's steps you have to go through, but you kind of have to go back out and come back in through the main, you know, like go to search for sci-fi shows. It's no longer a Star Trek category. It's a sci-fi category. If you click on the series there and go to the episode, I think it gives you the option to start from the beginning again rather than resume. But yeah, it'd be much better if that was an option all the way.
Yeah. Just give me a button.
There's a subreddit for Paramount Plus that says the new UI UX makes me wonder who they hired, if anyone, to design this boondoggle.
Yeah, right.
So it's I haven't seen it yet. It hasn't shown up on my smart TV. I'm still looking at the old one.
I did watch the new Beavis and Butthead today, so I'm quite pleased.
Because on this show, the topic is not Beavis and Butthead.
That's cool.
Fire, right. Fire.
Yeah, there are more insights on this report. If you want to delve into all the other categories of how Paramount Plus or other streaming services did, we have a link to that report. You can find it in the show notes for episode 120 over at thetopicistrek.com.
Now, do we have any news from Vulcan, Alberta, Canada this time?
We do not have any news from Vulcan, Canada.
Wait, we do. Got some? Flash. Wait a minute, I got some. There's a barbecue and car show in Milo this Sunday. Carmen Gay's Fair and Sports Day is this weekend. The grant was approved for a new electric powered ice resurfacer.
Are you reading the Vulcan Advocate again?
And the developer applies to rezone lots along Cottonwood Drive.
And Schlitz the dog was found and returned to its owner.
That's right.
Yes, the type of story that Craig mentioned is what I tend to find week to week when I'm searching for Vulcan Alberta Canada news. So nothing really much. However, we covered stories. We talked about Comic-Con and a couple of other things. But we have some additional stories, 26 additional stories.
Yikes.
That you'll find in the show notes. And a lot of the stories I didn't include were ones, rightly so, were stories about Nichelle. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them were talking about the same series of facts. So I did put one or two in, but I didn't put every single one of those stories in. So you'll find a variety of things from various series. Now, this time around, we've got stories for the original series, which rarely happens. Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Lower Decks, Picard, Strange New Worlds, the untitled Star Trek movie, which hopefully is coming in 2023. Star Trek comics. We've got some that are franchise wise and franchise wide, and some stories about various actors. So lots of links in there. And again, you can find them in the show notes for episode 120 over at thetopicistrek.com.
Hey, by the way, if you haven't seen it yet, I know we were talking about Nichelle earlier, go watch Woman in Motion if you haven't seen that. And you can see Absolutely. It on Paramount Plus or Peacock. I think really all the services have it. It's nice. It's a nice film. Really yeah, fills in well, a lot. It filled in a lot of blanks for me about her that I maybe kind of cursively knew, but it's really good.
Right. Especially when you think, okay, Nichelle was helping out NASA. Well, there's much more to that story than Nichelle was helping exactly. out NASA. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. It's time for my favorite part of the show. And that is when I get to say goodbye, Charlie.
I want to stay.
And eat my mashed potatoes.
I want them babe.
And we're going to head out on our main mission with a clearly appropriate sound effect.
Oh.
Ah.
The bridge scanner. How's that?
Oh, how nice. How nice.
We're scanning for an episode.
It's so anticlimactic. Just kind of fades
Fine.
In.
Fine.
All right. I'm going to have, how about you, Craig, give us the background and stuff about the writers, directors, and plot right. synopsis for our first episode.
Okay. So we're talking about Star Trek Enterprise yet again, season one, episode 11. The episode is Cold Front. It's written by Stephen Beck and Tim Finch. This was Stephen Beck's first credit. Yeah, no, I'm not near. Disagree. This was Stephen Beck's first credited Star Trek script. He had served as executive story editor on the episode Unexpected earlier in the season. This was Tim Finch's only Trek script. He served as co-producer on Enterprise during its first season. Now, it was also directed by
Tom Paris,
famous Trek face. Yeah, Robert Duncan McNeil, and I think Wormler was chasing him around with a plate.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, sign this.
Yeah.
On Enterprise.
That's right. Naturally, we best know him as Lieutenant Tom Paris, of course, from Voyager. He has also appeared in episodes of Murder, She Wrote, Crossing Jordan, Star Trek Lower Decks, Quantum Leap, but McNeil has an even longer list of directing credits, including Voyager, Dawson's Creek, Desperate Housewives. Somebody is a director on Desperate Housewives? Oh, well, I guess so. Desperate Housewives, the OC, Chuck, not the Chuck we know.
Hello.
Warehouse 13, and even more. So the short synopsis is Archer is confronted by a member of his crew who claims to be from 900 years of the future.
Future.
Right. And he is still there. Anyway, he's there to capture the Suliban operative who has boarded the Enterprise.
All right. So we go back to the story that we'll try to keep track of this story because it just fades off into nothing. Eventually the whole thing about, you know, the temporal Cold War,
mm-hmm.
but at this point in season one, they still are insisting it's going to be a thing. So keeping track, we have the mysterious man from the future, which, you know, some people claim is actually Archer, which makes no sense, but I don't know because we never really find out who it is.
Yeah.
He's sending Silic, who we had seen earlier in the season, off on this mission. And it's a strange convoluted mission as far as I can tell, but we'll get into that. The Enterprise at the same time comes across a transport ship, and it turns out that it's transporting people to go witness the great plume of Agasoria. And of course, Archer says, hey, why doesn't anybody come on board Enterprise? And
have a beer.
Well, yeah, we'll have a meal and sing some songs or whatever. Things go horribly wrong obviously, at some point in this, because Archer has to deal with the fact that it wasn't the chef, but it was the person who was, I don't know, what role was it actually that
Daniels
had? I mean,
yeah, he was like cabin steward or something lowly.
Yeah.
Oh, so it necessitated shifts.
They just referred to him as crewman. So
right.
He wasn't an ensign. He was just crewman.
But he reveals to Archer that he is from 900 years in the future. And there's this whole temporal war going on, which Archer says, hey, I remember something about that way back in episode one. Well, he didn't say it that way, but he's not convinced that Daniels is from the future. So Daniels goes a hologram on him and to prove that he's from the future.
That was right. The metaverse.
Yeah.
And then Archer is like, okay, I'm convinced. And T'Pol isn't, because Vulcan Science Academy has determined that time travel is impossible.
Right, yeah. Right. And we all
he's
know
closed.
We can trust. Yeah, that's like saying I read it on the internet.
Yeah. But Archer says, well, that's nice, but you're going to help him anyway, because he needs to find the Suliban. Then I don't. Silic does some filling around with the matter antimatter.
The injector assembly, yeah.
Right. And stops the Enterprise from having a major meltdown. It's unclear whether it would destroy the ship, but it sounded like it.
They implied that it was, because it was a cascade that was happening. And if the cascade had completed, they would have been destroyed. But because he unplugged the extension cord.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it stopped the cascade.
He just popped it out with his foot.
So, in a way, he's kind of a hero, no matter how you look at other things, because without him doing that, that would have been it.
But
been
what did they say? What caused that cascading failure?
Well, it was the ion storm. It was
They were getting a little too close to that,
where they had to go around it.
Yeah.
Right, they were trying to get around it, but it was moving towards them, and Mayweather was having trouble getting around it. So it hit them a couple of times, and the last hit nearly fried them.
So Mayweather bumped the curb with the new tires.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, he did that leaving dry dock, I think. So I've already done that once.
That was Galaxy Quest.
So I don't know what to make of that. That, okay, he's kind of the bad guy, but at the same point, he did save Enterprise.
Well, he only did it because he was told to.
True.
Yeah. So I don't know that he did it with a well intention. So I don't know if I'd call him a hero, but
it might be one of these predestination things that you had to do it so that the events would unfold. And if you didn't do it, you couldn't have done it. You know, your own grandfather kind of thing.
Silic is his own grandfather? I don't understand what's going on here.
Don't you see the resemblance?
To himself? Absolutely, I do.
Porthos is his grandfather.
Oh,
he was actually saving him. He was saving the dog. That's right.
Forget the rest of you. It's the dog I'm interested in. But Daniels is kind of vaporized in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But as we know, it's not the last we're going to see of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall exactly how he reappears. We'll get there eventually. But does anybody remember? Because I know some of you have rewatched the series recently.
Further in the future.
Yes, with Archer. I don't recall the details of it, but it's like, yeah, we see him again. He's not gone.
Yeah, what were they looking at? The Enterprise J or something?
They were looking for a library or through a library or something. That's all I remember at this point.
That's Interstellar.
No.
From the bookshelf. Anyway.
But,
am I the only one that did the homework here?
Disappointing ending. Yeah. Different movie.
Yeah,
but Silic does not get the temporal observatory that Daniels had, because that's what he was searching for. Now, I guess it wasn't clear why he needed it.
Well, I was trying to figure that to keep it from out of the hands of
Silic.
Silic,
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
No. But I mean, why did Silic want it? Because Archer threw it out through the open hatch to stop him from getting it. But if you've got somebody from the future that you're talking to, why do you need this other thing? Because clearly that guy knows what's happening and sends somebody to the exact point in time that he needs to send
them to. The future guy that we keep saying. You think he would know. Well, because if it's destroyed, then he wouldn't know. I don't know.
So that's a part that I just didn't know. What did he need it for?
It was his favorite toy when he was a child.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, you turn it one way and it makes the sound of a cow and then a dog. You know,
I see. It's a spinning.
What does a cow sound like?
Listen to the gorn.
It's a clicking sound we know so well, except from TOS.
That's right.
All right. Who has thoughts on all this shenanigans?
Are we done?
I didn't hate this episode. I do have a couple of thoughts.
Yes.
I do like Trip gets a little embarrassed when he's mansplaining the warp drive to the aliens. And they were
Yeah. And then they unleash a couple of questions that prove they know what the heck they're talking about.
Yeah. That, and I'm going to give John Billingsley some credit here, because I think he did some phenomenal acting.
Leading the ceremony of Agrosauria? Well,
he looks genuinely enthused to be participating. And every time I see that scene, it really strikes me that it looks like he's really enjoying what he's doing, being involved, and he's almost a little overwhelmed.
Line, though. He needed a cue.
It's okay. But you look at his eyes. I mean, it's like this. The other best Trek acting I think I've seen was Chris Pine when he's sitting there with Pike, and Pike tells him everything's going to be okay, and they have that father-son moment, and Chris Pine does that barely hint of a smile. I don't even know if he moves, but it's like makes you think, okay, he's beaming. I mean, he's enjoying this moment with his father figure.
And obviously you have the character having the same sentiment, because then he decides, you know, I think I want to go over to their ship a while and like hang around with them, because they're much more fun than you guys. So I want to go over there for a bit.
And I do have a thought then, because of the events that happened towards the end of the episode, does it make sense that did Phlox actually miss the plume? Because he was up there in the mess hall and they were looking out the window right when they did the little ceremony. And the next thing you know, Phlox, get down here. We need, they had to call them out.
In a minute.
Yeah.
I'm in the little Agrosauria room.
Yeah.
I'm busy.
I have a feeling that he actually missed it.
Missed it by that much. I don't know, because we don't get to see it.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So did it happen when Phlox was called away?
Probably.
Say, Phlox, get down here. And he said, on my way. And that's all you hear. Well, you don't hear any disappointment in his voice, because you know, be like, okay.
This was the first episode that I noticed right at the beginning that they encounter a new species and the universal translator works instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
There was no training. There was no mention of it. Like, because up until now, they've had to, you know, fine tune it or it would go out. This one, no problem. Like, hey, hi, I am Archer from the Enterprise. Yes,
Archer didn't have to go up and like kiss the view screen to make sure it was working correctly.
Awkward.
Call back to the last.
Yeah. I also like the captain on the other ship. He was like,
what do you want?
When Archer says, you know, it's part of our mission to reach out and meet new species. And the guy's like, another one of those.
Great.
I've already got a boatload of fruitcakes.
If I had a dime for every time I've met one of these people.
Yeah, I felt like they kind of softened him up before the episode was over, because, you know, he's giving a warning to the Enterprise about the upcoming storm, and he comes over to talk. Why he had to come all the way over to the Enterprise to talk to them about stuff. Yeah. I don't know.
When he made a big point I prefer to stay on my ship earlier. And then next thing you know, fine, I'll just go to the captain's ready room. Oh, sure. I don't know. I did like how his kind of not dismissive attitude, but kind of like, you know, I've done this a million times, kind of thing. You know,
he's the actor. He wasn't acting. They just didn't pay him. Yeah,
I'm getting $5 for the day.
Act grumpy. Hold on. Act grumpy. I can do that.
Yeah, I don't have to act.
Do you have any notes there, Chuck? You want to lay on us about Cold Front?
Where to begin? I thought Archer got a little too wound around the axle pursuing Silic. It was clouding his judgment. It was like, I don't care what he says. Daniels is find Silic. So it was just he's kind of all over the place.
And very trusting that he knew exactly how the walk through walls thing worked.
Yeah. It's like, hey, Captain, I think I have something that might be able to help you. Slip this on your hand and stick it over. It's like, oh, just, yeah that
you
was.
You end up looking like that that lady from TNG.
Stuck half, in the floor. Half in the deck. Yeah. He put a lot of trust in that little finger thing. And like you said earlier, there were a lot of loose ends in here that just.
Well, he did look a little uneasy trying to use it at first. Like, that's my only hope, you know, otherwise it's going to take forever to get in there.
Which is kind of odd because the effect, when you think about it, looked kind of similar to when Sam Beckett would leap into somebody's body.
Do you know what? Yeah, right. You know what I was thinking? I think it would make more sense if Trip was the one that went through that wall. Because he actually saw Daniels use it earlier,
right,
and understood what it did, rather than going, "Hey, listen, I got something for you. You can just walk through walls with this." And
yeah. If it didn't work,
I don't know how it works, and I don't know if it lasts an awful long time. So I'd run if I were you.
I'd be like, I don't know.
If it didn't work, he gets a promotion.
Yeah, true. Maybe. Captain, you'll always be a part of this ship. I mean,
no,
right.
All right. I think it's time to rate this one. Time to rate this one. I'm going to say we're going to do it on 1 to 10
plumes.
Plumes of Agasauria.
All right.
I will go first.
Okay.
I'm going to rate this one a 7. I felt like we have a promise that there's something to this temporal war. I don't think we get enough to make enough sense of it, like we're ever going to, but there are some good points and some bad points to that, okay, there's implying that there is something more that will happen on this front. And I did like the gruff captain just kind of like rolling his eyes at Archer going, oh, great. Yeah. I'd love to talk to you for a while. Sure, take the pilgrims. Yeah, if I'm rid of them for like an hour, I'm happy. So some fun aspects of it.
Yep.
So I'll give it a 7. Chuck, how about you?
I'm going to go a little lower to a 6. I thought there were a few too many loose ends. I will attribute the positive aspects the same as you. It was a great setup. It's like, hey, now we're getting into the beginnings of a long story arc. Mm-hmm. We're going to leave that one alone for the moment. And I also thought it re-energized that, the love to hate Silic. You know, he gets on your nerves. Like if I saw him, I'd punch him in the face. I just don't like him that much.
Yeah. Wow. It's kind of violent. Yeah.
There are some characters that you just love to hate, right? Mm-hmm. J.R. Ewing from Dallas, for example. Okay. That one just dated me really bad.
Well, see, but that's some good acting because he's really sucked you in.
Yeah. I mean, I hate Silic so much, but I have to watch him.
Yeah, that's right.
The train wreck that is Silic. All right.
Seven great plumes. Or no, six. What did I say? 6 great plumes for me.
All right. And how about you, Craig?
I'm also going to give it a 7. I think that I didn't hate the episode, but like Chuck said, there was some loose ends. There was a lot of stuff I did like. Again, about Dr. Phlox, his enthusiasm for experiencing, well, really anything.
We're still in season 1, remember?
Yeah.
7's pretty generous.
I know we're...
Last show we were talking like fours.
Well, it depends. I know it's a little, the first season especially is very uneven in Enterprise. But anyway, I liked it. I didn't think it was terrible, but yeah, there's some weird stuff in it.
All right. Well, let's move on to our second episode. And Chuck, you want to walk us through some of the details?
Sure. This is season one, episode 12, Silent Enemy.
Enemy.
I have to do that.
Anemone.
Anemone.
Written by Andre Bormanis. This was Andre's first script for Enterprise. He would go on to work on 22 more. He also contributed to 7 scripts for Voyager. Bormanis served as technical science advisor for Next Gen, DS9, Voyager, Star Trek Insurrection, and not Star Trek related, Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. Currently, Bormanis is a science advisor and writer for The Orville. How about that? It was directed by Winrich Kolbe. Although this was the only time Winrich directed an episode of Enterprise, he had previously done 15 episodes of Next Gen, 13 episodes of DS9, and 18 of Voy. Kolbe... That's what all the cool kids are calling it now.
Oh, I did. It saves time.
Yeah, all kinds of time. I kind of like that. It does save time. Kolbe also, now we're quoting Lower Decks.
It's Lower Decks. It's yeah.
This show is reaching new depths.
Right. Lower Decks. Lower. Okay.
Kolbe also directed dozens of other shows, including episodes of the original Battlestar Galactica, The Rockford Files, The Fall Guy, Scarecrow and Mrs. King, wow. Knight Rider, Lois and Clark, and Space Above and Beyond, among others. Wow.
Wow.
He's got quite the resume.
Yeah, kid.
He also got a chance to direct 3 Trek captains outside the Trek universe by directing episodes of, get this, T.J. Hooker, mm-hmm. A Man Called Hawk, and Tales of the Gold Monkey. Okay, which captain was associated with T.J. Hooker?
Oh, I know. Well, that's Kirk, obviously.
Which captain was A Man Called Hawk?
Sisko.
And which captain was associated with the Tales of the Gold Monkey?
Decker.
Stephen Collins.
Here's a short plot synopsis. Enterprise.
Are you checking on it? Enterprise. No good job or nothing?
I'm glancing at you for some smart aleck comment. Enterprise is attacked by an unknown alien spaceship, and his Archer orders the crew to install experimental phase cannons. Meanwhile, Sato is ordered to find out the riveting plot of what's Reed's favorite food for a birthday dinner.
Well, when you read it, it doesn't sound very
interesting. Nope, it doesn't.
It's not very interesting when you watch it either. And I think that this gets right to the heart of the matter that listener Diane asked us when we were doing the first part of these rewatches of Enterprise. Mm-hmm. It's like, can they make up their mind what the heck they want to do with Hoshi Sato? And the answer is no.
Yeah, not yet. Can't. Not yet.
So they sent her on a scavenger hunt this episode. Pretty much.
talk about a B story that doesn't jibe with the rest of what's going on.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm working on aligning the subspace relays. Have somebody else to do it. Get help with that. Your top priority is to go find out what Malcolm's favorite
thing is. Here's some aliens that keep doing drive-bys. And
yeah, drive-bys.
Yes.
And we're sitting there checking out. What is Malcolm's favorite food? Green beans?
Let me ask his sister, his best friend.
Before we get started, I gotta say that I know you're going to go through the story beats, but she called his sister when the subspace buoys were gotten destroyed.
Okay, I'm gonna stop there because before she even called this, they open up the show and they drop that Echo 2 relay.
It's labeled on the outside.
No, it's right there. No, not just that. If you were in motion in space and something fell out of your ship, it would keep going with you unless some thrusters or something stopped it. Yeah. This thing stops like it hit a tar patch. But there's no thrusters or anything. It just goes and it remains stationary. You're like, Echo 2 is away, sir. Like, how did that stop?
It's kind of like on Mythbusters where they were driving the truck by and they shot the cannonball and it stayed.
It's buoy. So right, it's a giant anchor that's you don't see that they don't play that it's, part.
What's
it's
an anchor to subspace?
Yeah.
There's a planet like way over there someplace and it's just anchored.
I thought it
that.
Was funny how it's actually labeled.
Right.
Echo one. Or
that's
Echo
so
two.
They can reference it later without having to say the Echo 2 space buoy relay, blah, blah, blah. To say Echo 2 is, Okay, that was my first, like, WTF moment of this episode. Please continue.
Well, what happens in this episode? Well, we've already talked about the subplot, and the subplot just keeps coming back and coming back for no apparent reason.
Filler.
But the main thrust of this story... Right there.
Crackpot talk.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. The main plot here is that you have an alien... Kraft shows up and Archer decides to do the same thing he did in the last episode and go, hey,
hi friends,
hey, how's it going?
Want a meal?
And there's no answer. And then the ship takes off and then the ship comes back again and still no answer, but then they scan Enterprise and shoot at it. And then they leave again. And then they come back and they shoot again. It's like, but you never find out their motive. And to me, one of the downsides of this episode is that they board the ship. They take a shuttle and board the ship. Now, I didn't have a problem with that per se, because that's showing that their technology is advanced enough that we can cripple you to the point where we can just board your ship if we want to. Mm-hmm. That I didn't have a problem with. I didn't like the fact that we saw them.
Agreed.
Now, it's a combination of things. It's a combination of, in the time of Enterprise, especially for made-for-television stuff, effects were not at the point where you were going to come up with something really convincing.
Right. Yeah.
We have this several times. Now, I think the Suliban are handled fairly well because you're stretching. And so you've gone from a believable state to an unbelievable state that you can't really unchasm Valley because the uncanny valley. Because people don't do that, so you have no point of reference. But when you have a creature that is just, you know, bipedal creature and it just doesn't look real, that's a problem. So if they had boarded the ship, stayed in shadows, done whatever they're doing and left, I would have been fine with that, because once again it would have said, you know, we can come and do whatever we want.
Yeah,
and you can't stop us.
Yeah, it kind of went from spooky to ridiculous as soon as you saw them.
Yeah, they could have done shadows and like the crewmen fall over, and they're like, "What happened?" You know, and never really see them.
And they have red circles all over their face from the salt monster.
Yeah. It starts off great that way because you see these shadows at the end of the hall.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking that's great. Just leave it at that. But no.
You were talking about the effects. There are times when the CG just isn't working quite right. At the end of the last episode, when Silic jumps out of the shuttle bay and he's basically free falling through space, which we won't get into that. That CG is that's not right. But you see these monsters walk and every once in a while, there's a telltale thing that your brain goes, that ain't right. Like their foot slides on the floor as they're taking a step, like they're walking on snot or something.
I thought that they did motion capture from Sasquatch, you know.
<they're walking around. laughs> And they do that very early, you know, rigging where all the moves just seem to have that same kind of flow to them for everything that they do.
Yeah.
It just, I think they could have saved themselves some budget and taken a lesson from Spielberg. You know, if you don't see it, your mind fills in those gaps.
Or Ridley Scott one of those kind of things. It's like, hey, not seeing it is just as scary sometimes.
Now, one of the main things about this story, the writer of the story said that the point was for the Enterprise to come across a species that they have no idea how to communicate with these people. They have no idea the motives, and then they just leave at the end of it, which I'm fine with that happening, because that of course should happen. that you're not going to be able to communicate with everyone. Everyone may have their own motives that you have mm-hmm. no idea
yeah.
what those motives are. And to just leave it at, we don't know. You don't want to do it all the time. There was a point where Next Generation did that every week of, we may never know what really happened.
Yeah.
But I think you can do it once in a while. And so I didn't have any issue with that part of it.
Yeah, you don't have to spoon feed me every answer.
There were two main points to this episode that I could see. One is they needed a conflict. They needed somebody more powerful with them so that they would be incentivized to upgrade the weapons. It was really about getting those phase cannons installed.
And it's also to galvanize them as a team.
Yeah, it definitely moved the relationships forward. We saw at first how Reed and Trip were at odds with, hey, you know, don't make modifications without consulting me first.
Right.
And Reed was going, well, there won't be a next time if we don't do something now. Not at the risk of safety. I won't. So, and then eventually they did come back and he said, hey, are you still routing that power through the main engines? Yeah. Well, the chief engineer approves.
So yeah.
It was some fun like that. Are we still ignoring the whole Hoshi mission?
Well, I found it interesting in one aspect. When Hoshi Sato talks to Malcolm's parents.
No, Archer talks to his parents.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. And they are really pissed. I thought, wow.
Well, no, they the father.
He was disappointed.
Right, but the way the father acts, and like you can picture that household and how you got Malcolm Reed out of that household.
Yeah.
That it's a very dysfunctional, like the mother is trying to make smooth over everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of, oh, everything's fine. And the father's just a boatload abusive. Of disappointment.
Yeah. that was borderline abusive.
Well, he ate what was put in front of him and his grandfather would have been happy. However, he didn't join the Navy. He went off.
The ocean's not big enough for him. Like,
well, look, his sister even turned out seemed pretty normal.
Yeah, although she had no clue either. Like,
well, no, anything
really about him.
I mean, aside from that, she seemed, you know, okay with how she came out of that household, look, being okay.
Yeah, and his best friend was kind of. Very chill guy. You wouldn't think that that's the kind of person that Reed would.
I'll take this call laying in my bunk.
Yeah, just like, what's up? Hey, let's talk about something. What do we say?
Oh, I thought this was a regular booty call.
Hey, okay. Hoshi, what are you doing tonight?
Yeah.
No, that scene comes up in the mess hall.
Oh, I loved that scene. Say what you will about the rest of her mission. That was priceless.
That was pretty funny.
That everyone felt awkward by the end of that scene.
Yes,
I know. That was really good.
Because through a miscommunication, we have Reed thinking that
Hoshi's coming on to him, and then she laughs about it too.
Yeah.
Well, you should. You know that makes you that helps your ego an awful lot.
You thought you thought what?
Yeah.
Not me ever.
Yeah. Ever. Right.
Ain't happening.
No, that was pretty good. That was a great scene.
Someone pointed out when she goes to talk to Phlox, and Phlox says, well, you know, the records are confidential, however, because of X, Y, and Z.
I'm under captain's orders.
That, you know, I can take a look. Somebody pointed out, I think it was on Memory Alpha, that these records are so confidential that he walks away and leaves them up on the screen.
Yeah.
Wow.
It'll be right here. I'll just leave this right here.
I don't have to call it up again. It's such a bother to go to the Elgars.
And then he says, bromelain. And I'm thinking, let's see, Josh or James bromelain?
No.
And he says he's allergic to this enzyme, but he's taking shots. We don't know if he just started last week or if he's done with his regimen or... It's like, here, have some pineapple. Hope it works.
Yeah.
Well, I had the sense that it was something he had to come to Phlox on a regular basis to get shots for.
Or, and his records were transferred, that kind of thing. You know, when you go from your old doctor to your new doctor,
and you get on the ship. You just had to go into an episode of Psych and steal a pineapple and come back, and you would have been fine.
That's right. Lord knows they got plenty of those.
They definitely saved budget on that cake decorator, though. That was pathetic.
Yeah. I think that they did that themselves.
During a warp storm or something.
Yeah, Chef didn't do it.
Porthos did.
Yeah.
And we get a smile out of Reed because it's his favorite food.
Earth, did you know? We're not on Earth, and we're not going to tell you.
I think I would have liked it better if he said, oh, God, not pineapple.
Right. I did, too. Well, I think they cut out the part that says, how on Earth did you know? I'm allergic!
Yeah, I haven't had a shot in 3 weeks. I'm blowing up like a balloon.
I would have liked that whole subplot if it was on a lighter episode.
Yes.
Yes.
Aside from, because I think by itself, I think it was fine, but it should have been, on one of those episodes where there's a couple of more humorous things or lighter things going on rather than.
Can I have one more nitpick?
You certainly may.
All right. Free. Archer says words to the effect like, you just blew up something the size of Mount McKinley. Like, shouldn't you have called that Denali by this point in the future?
Good point.
They didn't really know that at that point, even though it's the future, it's the past.
I think it was about the time that it was transitioning around the year 2000. I don't think they were too far off. It wasn't like, hey, all of a sudden in the year 2010, we're going to change names. It's always been called Denali by the locals.
Right. But anyway. I forget where Archer is from. I can't remember where he was born.
Let's see. Riker's from Alaska. Kirk is from Iowa.
Yeah. What city is claiming birthplace of Captain Jonathan Archer?
One of our listeners, hundreds of our listeners out there are probably yelling at there.
I bet it's right here in Memory Alpha.
Where is Archer from?
Born New York, upstate New York.
All right.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
In North America, Earth.
So, see, other side of the country, he had no idea. Nothing about, so he just, saw a picture, and it was an old caption, and that's what he went with.
He was born in 2112.
So, upstate New York, town of unnamed origin, you've got the opportunity to become the future birthplace of Captain Jonathan Archer, one of the most decorated and important captains in Starfleet history.
Well, as we've talked about on our other show, George Justin was just born the other day.
That's right.
I'm a laugh if somebody named their kid George Jetson.
Worth researching. Was there George Jetson born?
That would have been kind of awesome. Remember the .com boom? People were naming their kids after corporations.
This is my son, pets.com. Look at that.
Yeah, right.
Meet my daughter, Flues. That's just not a good name.
Just don't go with a domain name that's finally went to the crapper and got turned into a porn site. Yeah, exactly. And you didn't change your
flues.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've reached the point where we're gonna rate this thing.
With Whoopi Goldberg references here. I'm still on target.
All right, we're gonna go on 1 to 10 pineapples for this one.
Okay.
All right, because 10 pineapples will just send Reed into who knows. I liked a lot of the aspects of the main plot. Mm-hmm. I detested the fact that this was the subplot to this thing. So I'm gonna split the difference. I'm gonna give it a 5.
Yep.
Because I'm right down the middle on this one, saying these two, this is not peanut butter and chocolate, people. These do not go together at all.
Yeah.
All right. What about you, Craig?
Yeah, I agree with you. I was gonna say 5.5 because I did the parts I did like is when the team started working together. Even Malcolm was like, okay. I mean, he was too harsh with his team. They got to work together better, and I think that's an important aspect. So there's a lot of parts to it I liked. Like you said, I saw that whole subplot. It needed to belong, as I mentioned earlier, into a lighter episode. So, yeah, it was an oil and water thing. this episode was very lopsided.
And they kept going back to it. Why? Why didn't Archer say, let's hold off on that for now?
Yeah. Put a pin in that, Hoshi, and we'll come back later.
Next episode, we'll deal with that. What about you, Chuck?
I'm giving this an 8.0.
Oh, my.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I was upside down. It's a 0.8.
Oh, okay.
I was like, what? Did we just cross over into the mirror universe?
I love this episode. Oh.
My favorite of all time.
That's right.
Now, I'm going to give it a 5 also. It had a few moments, you know, some on the humorous side, some on the team building side, some that made you go, okay, we're going to run into, like you said, aliens that we know nothing about their intentions. Mm-hmm. I thought when we first started seeing the green accent lights on the other ship that maybe it was Romulan. Mm-hmm. Probably not Borg. They're the only other people that use those green, you know, accent lights under their.
Well, see, that'd have been great if we like to your point, Clint, we didn't ever see them.
Right. You could lead in and think they were Romulan or something, but you would be leaving a lot to your imagination. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, they stepped over the line a few too many times on this one.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that's our opinion about these two episodes, but you may have a different one. And if you do, feel free to leave a note over on our Facebook page or facebook.com/thetopicistrek. I don't think that gets a ding because it's not our site, but
just like, you know, everybody has opinions, just like opinions.
Yes. Thank you very much.
No, I know where he was going like that.
Just so
like,
do I.
It's like that's a human anatomical part. Everyone's got one.
Like a big toe.
Yeah. left ear.
All right. But we're going to talk about two more episodes next week. So I was looking up
2 weeks from now, next time.
Right. Next time around. So that will be Dear Doctor and Sleeping Dogs will be the episodes that we discuss on the next topic is Trek.
Please follow along with us.
Sounds like a song.
Share your pain.
Yeah.
All right. Now it's time to come back from our main mission with an appropriate sound effect.
Program initiated. Enter when ready.
Oh, okay. I will enter the warp speed roundtable section. And
there you go.
And be vaporized.
5 minute phaser. There's one on this like long.
That's the one. I cut it off, and it does it 3 times. So when you think you're done, you're not.
I'm sorry, Captain. The off switch is broken.
Did we get any responses on our post about the? We did.
Oh, we did.
Yeah. Hold on. I think we did. Let me go pull up the topic is Trek.
Yes, Gary Lindros said, so the question last time around was, given the way the new Trek series, including Strange New World, look, does it make sense for the Enterprise from the show Enterprise to look the way it does? Kind of see more of that evolution of technology. And Gary Lindros said, yes, I think it absolutely does. And can I reopen the Akira class NX design argument now? Well, we don't have time for any of that right now. But
he can talk about it next time he's on the show.
Absolutely.
But, wow. Yeah. Just by the way, this number on Facebook, I pulled up our question, and it tells you how many people engaged. 23 engagement. 1, and it says distribution score. -186.6x lower.
Gee, mine shows 194.7. Your number is better than mine. So,
and if I refresh it, it'll.
All right, but now we're going to go on to our warp speed roundtable question, and it's a bit of a poser here.
As are we.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to strike a pose right now. All right, it kind of comes off. One of the things that Alex Kurtzman was talking about in the Comic-Con panel, and I'm saying without knowing any details, because we don't know any details, out of curiosity, would you be most interested, again, without having details, in a new series based on Deep Space Nine or the Section 31 series or the Starfleet Academy series or a series based around Seven and Raffi.
Hmm.
So those are the ones that we most heard mentioned, and when, you know, Section 31 and I think Starfleet Academy kind of seem a bit more possible at this point. But just those four, which would you most be interested in seeing? How about you, Chuck? We'll start, go backwards here.
I was kind of doing the process of elimination on this. I think I'm going to rule out Deep Space Nine just because we've gone there. I like seeing new material. I like seeing new stories. I like seeing new threads, new characters, new universes. I know we talked about, well, we wouldn't do Deep Space Nine just for Deep Space Nine's purpose, but I don't know. The Section 31 just seems like it resonates more with me. I don't know why.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. How about you, Craig?
Well, I'm kind of in the same boat. I love Deep Space Nine. I wouldn't mind seeing some characters from there popping up in another one of these series. But so I'm going to go with a newer series. I would say probably, I mean, I like Seven a lot. Seven and Raffi is okay, but I'm thinking Section 31 also, because I could see where if they had different missions, of course, to go do different things instead of a big thread, maybe they would see some other characters, involved in the series as time. I mean, we may see some familiar characters involved in some of the stories as they go forward. I'm just taking a guess there. So I'd say Section 31. I think it's got the most possibility.
You just want to see Julian Bashir.
Diverse possibility.
Hmm? You just want to see Julian Bashir.
I bet he could be in there.
He could be.
Our man Bashir.
Well, I'm going to be odd man out here. I think it's because it's been talked about for so long, way back when, is Starfleet Academy. I mean, that's one of the pitches that Harv Bennett had.
Oh, yeah.
Way back when was to do a Starfleet Academy series, and that never went anyplace. So this idea has been kicking around literally for decades. So for me, what would that be? You know, how much of it would be based around the Academy itself? How much of it would be missions off with cadets and other things? So you could, and I think that also lends itself to something very episodic, but because they're cadets, you could have a revolving cast of cadets, you know,
that's
new cadets
true.
Coming in all the time.
Yeah.
So I find that an intriguing idea. It's something that we haven't had before, where it kind of necessitates a rotation of people through the series.
And every Friday night is party night.
Yeah. I'm actually not that far off from that, because I think that I was actually juggling between Section 31 and Starfleet Academy. So I would say that would be a close second for me. I'd like to see that. Maybe they'll do it like Saved by the Bell, you know, kind of.
No screech.
I was thinking about Starfleet Academy, but I felt that we got enough glimpses into that with, the Kelvin timeline. We see some Starfleet. We certainly see a bit of it in TNG and West Voyager. And, you know, so we've been there. We've experienced it. I could probably navigate the campus without a map by this point. Not to say there aren't stories in there that would be fun to explore, but I feel like Section 31 is still enough of a black box, literally black badges and everything.
It would be,
that you know, we don't know what we don't know, and that intrigues me a little bit more.
I guess the thing that made Starfleet Academy, and again, we don't know what time period it's set in either, because if it's set in a time period where, you know, we're in the distant future, you know, the 31st century, it's not going to be taking place in San Francisco, probably. It's going to be taking place off someplace else. So it's a completely new setting. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you would have a lot more non-human characters be involved with this idea of rebuilding Starfleet and the Federation. I think that it would be a story that could,
well, that's
tell
true.
Two stories at the same time.
Yeah.
But I don't think any of them are necessarily bad ideas. I think the odd one out is Deep Space Nine, because again, we don't know anything about these proposed series, or even if they're all proposed, but that one, to Chuck's point, is we've been there. It would have to bring something really new to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a tough one to crack too.
Yeah. Especially you don't have Nog anymore. You won't have Nog and some of this. Like I'd love to see, you know.
Well, you wouldn't have Garrick there.
You wouldn't have Garrick.
He's off rebuilding, you know, the home world.
Yeah. Because I remember in the documentary, they even pitched the storyline for one more season of Deep Space Nine. It was Captain Nog comes in when his ship gets destroyed right off the bat.
But, oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah. Which I didn't like that either. I was like,
well,
Nog ended up being one of my favorite characters.
They were just spitballing anyway. It's like, what would this look like if we were writers? He
turned into
again?
One of my favorite characters. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think what they were playing off the idea that he's a lot of people's favorite characters. So how do you have a shocking opening episode? That's what you do. That's sometimes what you find out.
Well,
people go, hey, the way we shock people is we kill somebody.
So at the beginning of Starfleet Academy, Boothby's going to go and kill somebody.
Yeah, because you got to reanimate
Ray Walston.
It's kind of got a problem there. But
by the way, that was I love that guy. He had a great personality. The actor.
Yep.
He played Popeye's
Ray Walston. Dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he played Popeye's dad really well.
And Spicoli's teacher.
And who? Yeah, that's right.
Did you bring enough pizza for everyone, Mr. Spicoli?
Mr. Hand.
All right, well, we wax nostalgic about Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Because the way I see it, is our time.
Now, that's the two. You need to mix that. Starfleet Academy and Fast Times at Ridgemont High. There you go. They roll out of the shuttle and smoke rolls out like Cheech and Chong.
They spray paint the one shuttle. It says, Romulans suck.
It is time to refill the dilithium chamber.
We're off the deep end again.
Oh, my goodness.
Tangents everywhere.
Tell them where you can find us.
All right. Well, you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word with the number 4.com. And please have a listen right now. I'm in the last third of my musical. That's right. This year I was doing a musical with Star Trek, a 31 chapter story.
Oddly enough, you didn't ask me to sing anything.
I did.
Nothing oddly about that. Matter of fact, I recall your wife was very pleased that I did not ask you to sing.
Yeah, right.
But who speaks for you guys this week?
I'm thinking if we keep up with these crazy ideas, which are no worse than Lower Decks references, we could get this done.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead. Right. You can find us, Technorama Podcast. Search for Technorama Podcast anywhere in your favorite search engines. You're going to come across us somewhere on the net, in your favorite social media, or whatever. Craig and I do a weekly show on Sunday nights live. You can join us 9:30 Eastern Time on Facebook and YouTube. Otherwise, we release the podcast the Wednesday after that. So look forward to seeing you there. Just odd news, bits, bites, and
hey, and if you don't mind, I'm gonna plug the season of Pod Love, which is the Dog Days of Podcasting. It's going on right now for the month of August, and you can go listen to all the podcasters. And if you still want to jump in and record a podcast today, go ahead. Go sign up.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Look forward to that. All right. But it's time to hit the theme, boys.
Did you give the URL, Craig?
The dogdaysofpodcasting.com. Okay, or no, there's no the. I'm sorry. I keep saying the. Go to dogdaysofpodcasting.com.
There you go. Now we can hit the theme, boys.
Excellent. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic Is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic Is Trek, don't
Put on the red shirt. All together.
Hey, I got Porthos recording on the Dog Days of Podcasting.
I did not know that. be sure to come to our panel at Dragon Con.